Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. No need to venture abroad for a walk on life's wild side. Very Local, the unique smart TV distributed service, proves why weekly on Finding Adventure, now in its third season. Showrunner Michael Callahan joins me next. Rising episodic TV director Deborah Kantmeyer comes by next half hour. Her latest work, the new and acclaimed Prime Video crime caper Harlan Coben's Shelter, and season 2 of acclaimed HBO period drama, The Gilded Age. We'll open hour 2 in celebration of Bob Barker, the popular first host of The Price is Right reboot, who passed away this past Saturday at age 99. Rick Morris, the host of the FDH Lounge, had Barker as a recurring guest, and he'll be here with reflections on Barker and those episodes. Also ahead, News No Quickies, our classic trivia question, and time for transforming the writers and actors' strikes. That's the subject of our closing half hour. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presented on more than 40 podcast destinations from the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our first half hour is brought to you today by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being. Welcome to all of you joining us, no matter where you are across the country, around the world, on this Monday afternoon, to the program all about TV's current and future. 75 degrees at the top of the hour. Great to have you with us. Big two-hour episode ahead. A lot of guests along the way, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Pick up the phone and dial in. 646-652-2906 is the number to call. It's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And you can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our superfan from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is already in the room, so you can join him there. And remember, if you use the phone or the room, either way, you interact with us and our guests. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow those instructions, and others will be live with you. Michael Callahan from Finding Adventure, live with us from Omaha, Nebraska, after these News Note quickies. CBS Sports NFL Today host James Brown will receive a Distinguished Service Award from the National Association of Broadcasters this fall. The honor will be presented to Brown at an NAB Show New York dinner October 25th. New Netflix action-adventure series Obliterated gets underway November 30th. D. Thomas Howell and Shelley Henning are among the co-stars. Bollywed, an unscripted series dealing with an Indian wedding family enterprise, comes to Fuse and Fuse Plus on September 6th. Drive with Swiss Beats, Onyx Collective's car culture docuseries, will debut on Hulu November 16th. 6 episodes will run there. And the latest seasons of Life Below Zero and Life Below Zero Next Generation will premiere back-to-back on Labor Day night, September 4th, on National Geographic. And that is News Notes for today. 2 years ago, we introduced you to a new network from the folks at Hearst. It's called Very Local, and it runs in markets where Hearst owns local television stations. It is a very interesting service distributed through smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. One of their best shows and longest running is Finding Adventure, which earlier this month launched its third season. Joining us live from Omaha, Nebraska, is the showrunner on the program. He also has a major role to play in Very Local. We welcome in Michael Callahan. Michael, happy Monday afternoon to you.
Same to you, Simon. Lovely to be here. Thanks for having me on, man.
You're very welcome. So how did Finding Adventure happen?
Yeah, so Finding Adventure, so Laura Ling is actually our VP of programming, and her and I work very closely. We wanted to produce something that sort of inspired people to get outdoors in their own communities. So, you know, we thought it might be interesting to identify a local fish out of water type, so to speak, and have Kinga Phillips, our host, show up at their doorstep and take them out on a exciting outdoor adventure in their own backyard. 26 episodes later, the show's doing really well. You know, this is part of the Very Local content universe, where we want to celebrate the value of our communities and showcase them in interesting ways. And I feel like Finding Adventure does that.
In doing the series, what have you and your production crew learned about the lengths that people can go to have adventure in their lives without having to go very far away for it?
Yeah, it's actually been super inspiring and uplifting to watch how this has gone down. So I kind of go back to our pilot episode. We found a teenage guy named Maverick in Orlando, Florida, who, you know, he was spending 8 hours a day, something like that, playing video games on a self-built computer, which is pretty impressive. But his mother nominated him to be on the show. And, you know, he was a little reluctant, I think. He was nervous about it. But Kinga, our host, has such a lovely sort of bedside manner. And she made him feel comfortable to do this. And he put his game face on and gave it a whirl. So, you know, we took him riding on an ATV, which was pretty action-packed. The guy went flyboarding. Simon, have you heard of flyboarding? Do you know what this is?
No, is that sort of like the air of surfboarding?
Yeah, so basically you're sort of connected to a jet ski on a long hose, and water comes out of these boots that you put on that have jet nozzles beneath you, and it propels you up in the water 10, 20, 30, you know, can go all the way up to 70 feet. And so, you know, Kinga does it, and she takes a couple tries, but she does it pretty darn well. And then Maverick gives it a shot, this total fish-out-of-water character. And he was extremely nervous, and it's a very intense activity. Not an easy thing to master. It can take a lot of trial and error to get up there. But you know what? He made it happen right away, acclimated quickly to it. And Maverick really took the whole thing head on throughout. I mean, by the end of his third outdoor activity, we usually go on three in an episode, Kinga Phillips was in tears. His mom was in tears, Maverick himself, the whole crew. I mean, it was pretty special watching this person transform and push themselves in this way. And it's a lovely experience every episode to see that go down. Finding adventure is pretty cool that way.
How do you, A, find the subjects, and B, match them up with the various adventures or challenges that they face in the episode?
Yeah, so we, you know, we have a team of about 50 staffers on our production team, from production through post-production, and our producers take on casting themselves, and they put out flyers on social. They, you know, we asked news viewers in our host TV markets for help. We went on Reddit, we went on Facebook groups trying to find the right people to come on the show, and the team did a lovely job doing it. So, you know, over the course of three seasons, we've had so many fruitful and inspiring episodes. I mean, we had, you know, a trans woman named Madison who's been battling cancer, and she had a pretty triumphant run of activities. There was a, you know, upper 20s mother who's a mother of three and been a mom since she was 14, and sort of wanted to find herself again. So she, you know, we had a young woman who was struggling with anxiety, and she ended up swimming with sharks, Simon, and Kinga is sort of an expert with that, but it's all really inspiring to watch. I mean, we had a guy, you know, just 3 years removed from a double amputation of his legs, and he ended up, you know, riding a mountain bike on local trails and going kayaking. So the team has done a wonderful job of finding people across the Hearst Television footprint to do this stuff. And then we talk to them and we find out, you know, what drives them, what are they interested in, what are they passionate about, and pair them up with things like swimming with sharks and whitewater rafting and surfing and rock climbing, kayaking with manatees. We've really done it all. And it can be helpful, too, just sort of talking to locals about what's going on in and around their area. And it's not a bad problem to have. You know, we have boots on the ground at these stations, too, and we can tap into folks who work there and live there and find out what's going on in their own backyard to take people out on.
You're hearing Michael Callahan. He is the showrunner of Finding Adventure. It's now in its third season on Very Local. That is the smart TV product and multi-channel bundle distributed services available in markets where Hearst owns a television station. So it could be very much near you. And he joins us live from Omaha, Nebraska this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you. 2 hours coming your way today, this final Monday of August 2023. And let's hear from you. You have a question or comment? Make that call now, 646-652-2906. or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our first episode of September 2023. We'll be joined by Michael Mazzella. We were supposed to have him on a couple weeks ago. We finally were able to reschedule him this morning. He's an Emmy-nominated producer for such shows as Extra and Dr. Phil, and he's a lot to say about the writers and the actors' strike and where he's going in his TV career. It's Michael Mazzella, Emmy-nominated producer. That's on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Now, do the people who are the subjects, do they pick the adventure they want, or is it a case of, you know, finding a way to match it up?
You know, I think we have conversations that are nice with them to find out what they're excited about. But in the end, it's all a surprise. And that happens in real time. I mean, it's kind of the perfect example of the sort of real reality TV that we're producing. Like we don't fake anything. We don't sort of overly dramatize it all. Everything we're producing at Very Local is sincere. And I would like to think that our users, our viewers appreciate that about the sort of universe of programming that we're building right now. It's very much a surprise to them. And I think that it keeps it interesting for them throughout the journey as well.
For those people who don't know Kinga Phillips, she was a former host on Discovery Channel's Shark Week. She's also known as an ocean conservationist. She is a female, a very thrill seeker, male or female. How did you invite her to host this show and really go beyond being a host, really being the person that is sort of like the mentor, the guide, the coach of these subjects?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, Kinga Phillips, we couldn't have found a better host for this. She is incredible. She's like a female Indiana Jones, is what we like to say. I met Kinga actually through my comrade here at Very Local, Laura Ling. And Laura had worked with Kinga when they worked together back at Current TV. Our SVP of Very Local, Andrew Fitzgerald, was there as well. But we had some meetings with Kinga when we started to come up with this concept, had her in mind for it, quite honestly. And, you know, like you said, I mean, she's probably best known as sort of the Tiger Queen on Shark Week. She does a ton of hosting for that every year. She's hosted numerous digital shows. She's cool. She's confident. She's energetic, brings a whole lot of heart to the series. And we couldn't have found a more perfect human, honestly, to host it. And she, you know, she shares texts with me throughout the seasons and after, you know, our episodes air from guests after being on the series, and she makes these meaningful bonds with the people that are on the show and is constantly going back and forth with them, checking in, hearing about what they're doing. I mean, they will text her on the fly telling her how they're continuing to sort of seek adventure in their lives after the show. And that's pretty dang cool. And that's pretty real. And she's got a sweet bond with everyone she's taken on the Finding Adventure journey.
Once Kinga gets into a city and meets with a subject, how much time is spent documenting what the subject does, the skill that they learn, whether it's fencing or mountain biking or kayaking or surfing? How much time do they have? Does everybody get the same time period, or is there some flexibility in terms of learning the skill and actually doing it?
Yeah, everybody, you know, we kind of cater that to, you know, how ambitious is the activity itself. And some are more than others. I mean, obviously something like kayaking is going to be a little bit easier, but, you know, if you're kayaking into some beautiful caves in and around your hometown, we got to give it a little bit more time out there in the field. But generally speaking, we're going to shoot the show, each episode, over 2 days. So assume that it's, you know, about three activities shot over 2 days, and we do the best we can to give them more than enough time to kind of acclimate and get to know each of the activities. And it's worked out really well. I mean, people really put their game face on and make this stuff happen. I mean, somebody who is afraid to go in the water ends up surfing on Finding Adventure in a very short order. And I think that that has a lot to do with Kinga being a great sort of player coach out there inspiring them to give it a shot and giving them that confidence to try it. So even on that timetable, you know, a fairly tight period of time over 2 days shooting, every time we've made it happen.
Mm-hmm. In this season, something very interesting happens. I mean, I believe you've done this before, where you have people who are disabled one way or another learning not just one skill or doing one, but two at the same time. And you've got a couple of episodes either that have already been seen or are coming up. For example, you have a double amputee based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who is doing both kayaking and mountain biking. You have someone who's dealing with multiple sclerosis, MS, who is doing both extreme, not just tree climbing, extreme tree climbing, and skydiving. Were there any, when you decided to do those episodes, or episodes like that in the past, has there been in the back of people's minds something like, hey, you know, it's one thing to have these people master one practice, two at the same time?
Yeah, I think that that's just part of the ambition of it, and what sort of makes it such a profound journey for them out there is that they're pushing themselves and trying something that they've never tried before. And it's amazing. You put your mind to something, it's amazing what we can accomplish at human beings. And I think that's what Kingdom brings out of them. I mean, the stories that you're bringing up were lovely and wonderful. The skydiving episode is incredible to watch. The leap of faith that they took is fantastic. I mean, there, you know, we also had a young woman who has been hearing impaired since they were very young and lived very conservatively because of it, you know, for fear of not, you know, damaging her hearing any further. And she went out there and she did the three activities and absolutely crushed it. So, yeah, I think it's just a testament to how committed all these folks were to come forward and be a part of the show and give it a shot and be inspiring. And the best part about it is they're taking what they experienced and they're living on and continuing to do it as they send myself notes, King of Notes, all the time about their progress. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. There's an organization that we have covered on this program several times. They're going to be celebrating their 10th anniversary called Respectability, which has been an advocacy group encouraging more portrayals of the disabled by the disabled in both scripted and unscripted programming. Have they contacted you about the series? And at the same time, have you gotten feedback from members of the disabled community or similar advocacy groups saying, thank you for what you're doing, that you're showing people who, despite their physical challenges, can accomplish anything they put their mind to?
I haven't heard from this organization, but it's absolutely on our radar. It's the kinds of stories that we are looking for and want to push forward with. There's no shortage of meaningful stories to tell out there. As long as our viewers keep responding well to the show, I mean, we'll have real talks about bringing it back. We believe in it. I'd be happy to field ideas about who might be great to have on the show and build more partnerships in that way as well.
Mm. Based on what the audience has said, what is, in their minds, the most impactful or inspiring Finding Adventure episode yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they all resonate sort of in their own way. I think for me, and one that I've heard a lot about is there was a nurse who had sort of dealt with the painful realities of COVID at work for a very, very long time, and really needed this as a release and a new step forward in her life. And I think that story of the COVID nurse really resonated with viewers quite a bit. And honestly, all of the episodes that I've talked you through already, people have been very excited about. We also get notes from viewers that are really special, and they thank us. You know, they'll come out and thank us for featuring such a diverse slate of human beings with a diverse slate of stories that they're telling, and they love seeing all kinds of different people featured on the show, and we want to continue to be leaned on to bring that to people.
Mm-hmm. Finding Adventure. That's one of the number of original series you can find and markets where hosts on a television station on Very Local. That is the programming service that's running through smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel buzz. In a moment, we're going to tell you about some of the other shows on Very Local and what they've got planned in their third year on the air, which starts very, very soon. We're talking to Michael Callahan. He is the showrunner on Finding Adventure. He joins us live from Omaha, Nebraska this half hour. First of our two-hour show today on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy to have you with us. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. 75 degrees. We approach the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment, many minutes with Michael, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can join me in person on Wednesdays on Sports Newswire. That is the daily sports news information show on Sports Grid Network, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific. Sports Edge is available on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. We talk about the TV sports scene. We'll probably have a preview of NFL TV coverage this year and much, much more. That's Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, Sports News Wire on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Right now, Very Local runs in areas where Hearst owns a television station. Has there been any talk about finding ways for Finding Adventure to get a national audience? For example, you have the deals with all the broadcast networks for the Saturday morning blocks, 4 or 5 hour blocks. Has there been talk about perhaps adding Finding Adventure to any of those blocks?
Yeah, you know, I think that's something that we're definitely going to be playing around with. I think you'll see more Finding Adventure on linear, but there's a lot of different ways to find Finding Adventure. So obviously, we really zero in on the 26 Hearst TV markets and build a robust world of local unscripted programming around our sort of tentpole product, our local news, and it's pretty sweet. I mean, it's kind of like we're building the Netflix of local is what we like to say around here. But you know, our Very Local feed is also available national. Anywhere you are, you can pull up the Very Local app on on your smart TV, whether it's Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Samsung. You can find us, and we got a pretty dang good audience even outside of the 26 Hearst TV markets. And our non-scripted programming slate spans a myriad of genres. I mean, there is food and drink series like Blind Kitchen and Plate It. We have a tourism series called Eat, Play, Stay. I think we will have delivered 69 episodes of Eat, Play, Stay very soon. We have a DIY series called Maker Nation with Ashley Adams from Feast of Fiction fame on YouTube. We're mining our Hearst Television archives at all times to help produce a true crime series called Hometown Tragedy and another one called Crimes, Cons, and Capers. We even have a dating series called Local Love. A local single goes on 3 dates in and around their hometown, goes to cool, fun places that offers a lot of utility for locals as well. And at the end of each episode, the dater chooses one suitor to go on a second date with. It's kind of a throwback, and it's just kind of earnest and sweet, and has worked out pretty good. We have documentaries. I mean, I think we've built a diverse, very sticky world of content around our tentpole offering, local news, and audiences are responding very positively, not just in our home 26 markets, but beyond as well.
Mm-hmm. And what's in the pipeline either for premiering this upcoming year as well as development for future years?
Yeah, I think we are actually in the middle of trying to finalize a 2024 content slate. But I tell you what, we're gonna do more of some of the franchises that have been so good to us, like A Hometown Tragedy. Obviously, Finding Adventure is going live right now. We have greenlit a spinoff on our DIY series, Maker Nation, called Maker Nation Challenge, where we are going to various Hearst TV markets and finding makers and crafters of a specific craft. And they're competing against each other, making something that's sort of inspired by their city, and we crown a winner at the end of every episode. We're super excited about that. That's going to be a 10-episode season. that'll premiere next year, also hosted by Ashley Adams. But you know, we have content in the sports world. We have more documentaries coming, amazing local specials produced by our local news teams that are exceptional. We have a you know, sort of mystery paranormal pilot that we're going to be working on and filming very soon. So we're going to continue to expand the content slate. So we got something for everybody, Simon. I feel like we have things that can resonate with anybody that comes to the channel, and they'll enjoy it. And the work is strong. I mean, we have a really amazing team here of creatives that come from all walks of the creative world, including, you know, sort of veteran unscripted TV people that, you know, bring a great history of producing amazing unscripted TV on cable to the fold. And they, you know, they are now full-timers rather than, you know, living that freelance life. And maybe, you know, they get to call home their hometown, like myself, actually, you know, versus living on the coast, and they can make up for lost time with their families and whatnot. So we feel really good about our model and our staff. It's a lot of really special people who just want to make really strong television that people can enjoy, and I think we're doing that.
The program is called Finding Adventure. It's going into its third season on Very Local. You can find Very Local either on areas where Hearst owns a television station, and you can also get it nationally as well through the Very Local app on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. For more details about the program and the service, go to www.verylocal.com online. That's www.verylocal.com. Finding Adventure, now in Season 3 on Very Local. Again, it's available regionally or locally through Hearst television stations in various markets around the country, and nationally through the Very Local app on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. Michael Callahan, showrunner on Finding Adventure, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on making it to a Season 3, and congrats to all the other Very Local producers and hosts for what they're doing all around the country. It's been great having you with us and kicking off today's episode.
Simon, I had a blast, man. Thank you so much. You have a good one.
You're very welcome, Michael. Have a super week and a great Liberty weekend ahead.
You too.
Michael Callahan, the showrunner on Finding Adventure on Very Local, joining us live from Omaha, Nebraska. More Tomorrow Televised coming your way after this message from Liquid IV. Here's a new wellness routine that's easy to take and keeps you in hydrated shape. Liquid IV. It's a great-tasting drink mix in stick form that, when you add with water, delivers hydration to your body faster and more efficiently than water alone. What's more, you get 5 essential vitamins, B3, 5, 6, 12, and vitamin C, and 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. There's 12 flavors of drink, all delicious and refreshing, like Concord Grape, Passion Fruit, and Watermelon. Liquid IV is gluten, dairy, and soy-free. Just go to liquidiv.com, that's liquidiv.com, to order, and you get 20% off using the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop for better hydration today using the promo code TELEVISE at liquidiv.com. Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures. You're listening to Marvie Televised. We have a promo about TV's current future. We come your way Mondays and Fridays, sometimes other days during the week as well. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. We're also carried on our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and on more than 40 different podcast sites, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, the Zencaster Creator Network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many, many more. And by the way, if there's a podcast favorite site that doesn't take our show, let us know about it. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Let us know who to talk to. We'll do the negotiating, and hopefully we'll get on your favorite podcast site not too far down the road. When we come back, we will meet a fast-rising episodic TV director. She made her TV debut 4 years ago on the popular Oprah Winfrey Network series Queen Sugar, and she has had a whale of a ride ever since. Her latest work, the popular new Prime Video series Harlan Corbin's Shelter, and the upcoming second season of The Gilded Age on HBO. Deborah Kampmeyer will join us live from Piedmont, New York, or Piermont, New York, I should say, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love racing, and I mean really love racing, On BTR tonight, check out Fan 4 Racing Radio, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. That's Fan 4 Racing Radio tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to this half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. It's brought to you by Laird Superfood, plant-based coffee creamers, and other products that fuel you from sunrise to sunset. So I'm back with you along for the ride from Nueva York, 75 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Welcome to those who are just joining us at the bottom of the hour. 90 minutes more coming your way. Big two-hour edition overall. And we want you to get involved in the program. And our guests, all you got to do is pick up the phone and give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, our super fan from Philadelphia, still in the room. Our next guest entered the world of television directing 4 years ago by being one of the people doing Ava DuVernay's incredible groundbreaking series on the Oprah Winfrey Network, Queen Sugar. He then has had a great run as an episodic TV director on such shows as another Ava DuVernay-owned show, Cherish the Day. She's done Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek Picard, FBI International for Dick Wolf, Tales of the Walking Dead. And currently, her latest projects are the brand new series on Prime Video that's getting a lot of attention, Harlan Corbin's Shelter, which she's done at least two episodes of. And you'll also find her work on the upcoming second season of the critically acclaimed series, The Gilded Age, from Downton Abbey creator Julian Fellowes on HBO and Max. Joining us live from Piermont, New York, in an internet radio exclusive, Deborah Campmeyer. Deborah, welcome in.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's such a pleasure to be here with you.
Same here, Deborah. When you did those first episodes of Queen Sugar, being one of that incredible group of directors, all female, and many people of color, that got the opportunity through Ava to do Queen Sugar, did you think that your directing career in television would be going this far by now?
You know, it was the hope, of course, that I'd you know, break in, but it had been decades of trying to get through this door, so there was, you know, I had no idea how it would unfold, but I can say that, you know, Ava changed the landscape of my career by giving me this opportunity, and I think she changed the landscape of television by giving all of these women and women of color, especially, these opportunities. It's incredible what she's single-handedly done for our industry.
How would you sum up what she did? What made it so special to have all these women and many women of color do this one series and do it the way that they thought it should be done?
You know, she really stuck by her guns. She said, this is what I want to do. Oprah stood behind her. Despite a lot of people saying you can't do that, she said, I'm going to have only women directors, and most of them first-time television directors. And that was revolutionary. There's so many women just trying to get through this door, and it was a very closed door. And, you know, I think what's also to be noted is the door was closed to Ava, and she just went, built her own house, and opened a door to so many women. And all of these women have continued, you know, to have television careers. And, you know, that's extraordinary. And, you know, I think a study just came out from 2022. I think Reframe did it. And we now have 40% women directors. And that was unheard of before Ava took this stand for us.
Mm-hmm. How do you like the way your career in episodic TV has done so far? In the shows I mentioned, one very clear pathway is that you're not stuck in one genre. You've done human drama, you've done police procedurals, you've done science fiction, you've done horror genre. Now you're doing sort of a young adult with Harlan Corbin's Shelter. You've got the period piece with Gilded Age coming up, a lot of people looking forward to. What do you think about having that kind of career where people can't pigeonhole you?
I keep saying I'm genre agnostic, you know. For me, where you could pigeonhole me is humanity, right? Like, it's all about the human relationship. It's all about our needs, our desires, our longings. And that can happen on a spaceship in the future. It can happen in the 1800s in the streets of New York City. And so, you know, for me, it's all about the humanity, and that I can place anywhere. It is a thrill to get to play in these different arenas. And, you know, explore 1800s New York. And there's incredible research done on that show. We have historians. It's just a thrill to get to, you know, swim in that world. And then, you know, to study, you know, the canon of Star Trek. It's just really exciting. It opens the imagination. It, you know, challenges. There's always a different challenge in each genre, which is fun and thrilling. So it's just been an incredible ride I've been on.
Mm-hmm. What's it like to be a director on a television series where you're not the first director? You didn't direct the first episode or the episode that sets up the characters or sets up the premise. But you have to come in along with others and do the second or the third or the fifth or the sixth episode, sort of come in, you know, somewhere between the beginning and the end of a season.
Right, yeah. I come in as a guest director, and I am a guest at this party, if you will. You know, I come in, I love to prep, and so part of my prep is finding out what's on the menu, right? Like, who's my DP? Who's my AD? What's the showrunner like? You know, I'm learning about all of the people who are hosting me, essentially. And, you know, I'm not going to come in to this party and, like, bring a dish that clashes, right? Like, I'm going to, like, think about the menu and go and pick the most exquisite bottle of wine that I can bring to dinner. And hopefully my bottle of wine elevates the meal, right? You, like, take a sip with that bite of food, and the whole experience is even better. And so that's how I think of it. I'm coming in to a group of artists who've put a lot of time and energy and attention to something they're very passionate about. And I'm hoping my vision is there to elevate what's already established. You know, part of what I do is research my cast and learn about them and meet with them and hold space for them. And same in my crew. I'm looking at what they've, you know, done both on this show and in previous, you know, pieces of work, and really, I think my job as a director is hold space for people to do their best work in all of the departments.
How much prep work do you do not only on the episode at hand and elevating it, as you just said, but also credibility and continuity to make sure that your contribution is on that same credible, continuous plane, so that while you're trying to elevate matters, no matter where the storylines are at, that you're not, you know, meaning the audience believe, oh, this is not credible, or, oh, I didn't see this. I didn't know where this really came from in terms of the continuous, you know, credibility, the consistency.
Absolutely. It's a huge responsibility you have, because you are responsible to continuing the tone, the logic. You know, there is an established look. You're not going to break that look. You want to know. I mean, I go back and watch the previous episodes if there's a, you know, a season before mine, or even if I'm coming in mid-season, I'm going to watch all of the dailies that have been shot and anything that's been assembled in terms of the cut, so that I'm really honoring what's been established. And bringing an understanding of the overall arc of the story as well, so that I can keep track of that. That's a big part of my job, for sure.
We're speaking with episodic TV director Deborah Kampmeyer. Her current work is now on Prime Video. It's Harlan Corbin's Shelter. She had several episodes of that series. We're going to talk about that shortly. It's getting critical acclaim, by the way, on Rotten Tomatoes, high scores, both critics and viewers. And coming up, the second season of The Gilded Age from Downton Abbey creator Julian Fellowes. That will be coming up shortly on HBO and replayed on Max. And we'll find out about some projects that she's working on, not only as a director, but as a series writer and creator. That's all coming up. She joins us from Piedmont, New York, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy your waves wherever you're joining us from. Simon Appel with you live from New York City proper, 75 degrees after the bottom of the hour, mostly cloudy skies here in the Big Apple. On this final Monday of August 2023, let's hear from you. All you got to do is pick up the phone and dial it in, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up at the top of the hour, classic trivia question. We have two musical CDs and an Uber card provided by AMC Networks. If you know the correct answer to the question, we're going to pop. And then in our next half hour, we'll kick off hour two with a special half-hour tribute to Bob Barker. The Price is Right, Truth of Consequences, game show host, the iconic one himself, who passed away over the weekend at the age of 99, Rick Morris from the FDH Lounge. We've had him on the program before. I've been on his show before. He had Bob Barker on regularly as a guest. We'll get into his adventures with Bob Barker after the top of the hour. And we want to hear from you, too, as well. We'll also have, by the way, a statement from Fremantle, the company that produces The Price is Right and Let's Make a Deal and Family Feud and so forth, on the passing of Bob Barker. That's all coming up in the half hour ahead, starting at the top of the hour. By the way, that half hour will be commercial and promotion free, so we get as much from Rick, as much from you as possible. Deborah, what's been the reaction to what you've done on Harlan Corbin's shelter?
You know, it's been exciting to see how much people are enjoying the show. I was fortunate to be at one of the VIP screenings right before the premiere, and just getting to sit in the audience and hear the laughs and the gasps, and, you know, it's just, it's very exciting to have the response we're receiving for the work.
I've seen some clips of your work and of the show proper, and it's a fun ride when you see it. Harlan Corbin, by the way, is a very popular author. He's done a lot of work now in television, both here and abroad, for various networks, now with Prime Video. Did you and him have an opportunity to get together before shooting the episode and go over ideas?
Absolutely. I mean, he's one of our showrunners, and so he was there, you know, every day. I would visit set and speak with him, both in my pre-production and also while we were shooting. He was very involved, you know, so it was incredible to have him there. You know, of course, I read the book and then the screenplay, but to have him there was just an incredible opportunity.
Now, this takes place in Castleton, New Jersey, and it deals with a teenager who his father passes away because of an accident, or a car accident, and he finds the more he spends time in that town, the more he, including this particular really wonderful mansion, it's very, very impressive when you see it on the screen, the more he finds out that the town is not all it is cracked up to be.
That, yes, that's right. And I think that, you know, it's this wonderful mystery. And I think there's a way in which, well, even for myself, it took me back to being a teenager and reading, you know, Nancy Drew mysteries or Agatha Christie. I think there's something, you know, you've just stepped out of childhood and you've moved into this world that you begin to discover can be very scary and dangerous. And I think there's something really powerful to see these teenagers who are making a difference, who are, you know, capable of making change in their community. And there's something about that I think is really inspiring. I think it makes the world a little safer when you can, you know, join in with our heroes and help solve the mystery and bring justice. I think there's something really compelling for, you know, teenage hearts, and certainly resonated with mine.
Mm-hmm. He has a very interesting cast to work with. The teenager, by the way, is Jaden Mitchell. He plays Mickey Bolter, the key character. And he's joined by Spoon, played by Adrian Greensmith, and Abby Corgan plays Emma Window. But you also have some very interesting adults you're working with. You have Thompson Zimmer, and you also have Tobel Fellowship. We've loved her for years. Amazing actress on Broadway, TV, film. And here she plays the Bat Lady. So what was it like working with all these people in their different roles?
Oh, it's just incredible. I mean, Tova is a legend, and so working with her was fantastic. And, of course, Missy Pyle and Constance. It was, you know, it's always incredible to hold space for actors who are seasoned and, you know, real pros. But these kids, oh, my gosh, the passion they brought. You know, some of them, it's very early in their career. Some of them, you know, have done it a lot. But all of these young actors are bringing such heart, and it was just thrilling to work with them and learn about them as individuals, as human beings, hold space for them to explore this world and their characters. It was a real honor to get to do that with all of them.
There's also quite a bit of humor, too, especially in the scenes taking place in the school, where the characters, the young characters, get together, and I think one character, like, constantly repeats something like, we shouldn't be going this way, and yes, we should be going this way, kind of.
Right. Yeah, it's delightful, right? It really, it's fun. The humor really, I think, lifts us out of some of these really heavy subject matters, and, you know, I think Adrian especially is our fool and brings so many laughs, and I think it adds a really fun, entertaining element to the show for sure.
Before we get to the Gilded Age, are there any role models as directors that inspire you to do the kind of work you do?
You know, in terms of this show, Ed Ornelas, our producing director, was really inspiring to me. I loved what he was doing visually with this show, and so I really studied, you know, his work in the dailies. We talked a lot, and so coming into this show with him as my producing director was really inspiring. You know, someone like Suzanne Beer, who did Night Manager, that's like, I adore that. I think of that in terms of a mystery of sorts, but she's a real auteur, and to see what she's done stepping into television is incredibly inspiring to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Gilded Age is a totally different animal. It takes place in a past period before the 20th century, and it got great reviews for the acting, the writing, by Julian Fellowes and crew, the production design, and so forth. What was it like getting into that world and sort of, again, bringing that to life in, as you say, an extended way or an elevated way?
Yeah, again, I was following the lead of great directors, Michael Engler and Sally Richardson Whitfield, who'd done season one, and, you know, really studying their work. It was exquisite work they were doing, and it was very inspiring to me studying that. And so stepping into the world they created was very exciting. You know, this show is one where part of what the audience wants is to see these incredible gowns and these mansions and the interior space. And so there's a visual language that's really, you know, expansive in this show, so you get to do really fun work with your cameras and creating, you know, beautiful mise-en-scene as you're, you know, flowing through the world. So it was very exciting to get to step into it. And, of course, stepping into a Julian Fellowes show is just, you know, you can't believe it. And, you know, and then, of course, this cast, there's just, like, nothing like it.
And something to point out is that both this show and I believe Shelter were shot in the New York metropolitan area.
That's right. Shelter was in New Jersey, and this Gilded Age is, you know, we're all over. We're on Long Island. We're in Westchester. We also spent a little time up in Providence, Rhode Island. And Newport, excuse me, Rhode Island. So it's a real New York show, The Gilded Age, for sure.
In a moment, we're going to talk about a pair of projects that our guest is working on, not only as a director, but also as a series creator and writer. We are speaking with Deborah Kampmeyer. She's including in her episodic TV resume, Harlan Corbin Shelter, currently now on Prime Video, available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. And coming up, the second season of The Gilded Age, the critically acclaimed series on HBO, which I believe will be starting in several weeks. And Deborah joins us live from Piermont, New York, up above New York City, here on Tomorrow Be Televised this half hour. Sam, I'm with you live from New York City proper, 74 degrees near the top of the hour. We have a question or comment remaining minutes with Deborah. Go ahead and dial in 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple0419, coming up again, classic trivia question of the week. And then at the top of the hour, our special half-hour commercial-free tribute to Bob Barker, including some thoughts from Rick Morris, the host of the FDH Lounge, who Barker was interviewed by several times over the course of his career. That's all coming up. We want to hear from you, too, also. So, but we will, because of the fact, we want to get your thoughts in about the iconic one, Mr. B. We will be on commercial-free and promotion-free for the next hour. So you're working, I understand, on not one, but two new television series where you do more than directing, right?
I do have my own projects in development. That's correct. I'm in the process of, you know, getting those written and, well, not at the moment. We're not writing at the moment, but do have them in development.
Well, tell about each one of them, because, again, it looks like these are very different from what you've done before.
Sure. I have a project called A Witch in Harlem, which I wrote with a dear friend, Diane Richards, and comes from a film and then a play that a film script and then a play that was produced off Broadway. And we decided, she came to me and asked if I'd help her create a television series out of it. So we have been moving that out into the world. And then I actually have a feature that is in development called The Cassandra, based on a novel of the same name by Sharma Shields that we have in development as well, that is, in a way, I think, like a companion piece to Oppenheimer. I think of Oppenheimer as the male POV of the experience of the atom bomb, and the Cassandra is the female POV.
By the way, Witch and Heart, is that a supernatural show? Is it more comedic? Is it sort of like Wednesdays on Netflix?
Yeah, it's more supernatural. It's got certainly an element of magical realism in it, and it travels through time. There's an element of reincarnation and journeys that are taken on, you might call them like ayahuasca trips.
Mm-hmm. And then we have a miniseries. It's got some kind of title, Radioactive Mothers. It's one of those that when you hear it, you like say, how do I visualize this?
Yeah. That's actually based on a documentary that was made by Heidi Huttner about the women of Three Mile Island and the nuclear accident that occurred there and the environmental ramifications that have followed that. And, you know, it's got a Chernobyl feel to it and really is focusing on the experience of the women and what it's like to be a woman taking care of our children in a world that, you know, has this both nuclear danger and masculine danger in the world that we face.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, luckily as a director, you've got the Guild contract with the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers, and yet here we are, we still have a writer's strike, we still have an actor's strike, and we'll be talking more about it in the next hour. Basically saying that it's time for a total transformation about this whole thing's approach. What do you make of this?
You know, as a DGA member, I'm totally, you know, in solidarity with the actors and the writers. A lot of people are suffering. I hope the writers and actors get what they deserve and that a fair deal is negotiated. Like, we have amazing writers and actors on both the shows we just talked about. You know, in addition to the, you know, established actors, been around so long, you've got these young actors like Jaden and Adrian and Abby and like Sage Linder and Sophia Adler and Brian Altimus and, you know, Antonio Cipriano. I'm saying their names because they don't get to celebrate this moment of, you know, for some of them, this breakout moment. They don't get to do press. They don't get to go to premieres, they don't get to celebrate. And so, you know, there's sacrifices beyond jobs that are happening, emotional sacrifices, but then also not just our writers, not just our actors, but our whole crew. We have our crew who need to feed their families, right? We have, you know, not just our writers and actors, but we have our grips and our gaffers. We have our caterers and our truck drivers, and we have our, you know, hair and makeup, and we have our wardrobe. There's so many people that are a part of this industry that are really suffering right now. And I, as I said, I just hope that, you know, we can get this done, that these writers and actors get what they deserve and that a fair deal is negotiated.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get into that coming up in about a half hour from now. To give you a sneak preview, One of the things that I think has to happen is that both the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA must negotiate at the same time with the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers. None of this, we wait for the writers to have a deal and then we'll deal, we'll talk. Mm. It's time for both organizations to negotiate together. You can walk and chew gum with this alliance.
Yeah.
And we'll have more to say about that. I think that's been a huge problem. Everybody waited for the Directors Guild to make a deal, then the writers, doesn't work. Does not work. And it's been a massive botch on everybody's part. And it's time for everybody to start behaving like normal human beings or mature human beings and get the deal. So more about that coming up. And those of you out there, we'd like to hear from you too. And is anybody from SAG-AFTRA and Writers Guild, Directors Guild, AMPTP, we'd love to have your thoughts also. So get ready for that. That'll be coming up after the bottom of the next hour. And remember, coming up, you've got two wonderful shows that our guest is doing. One is Harlan Corbin's Shelter. That's currently running on Prime Video, available on Smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. And coming shortly, the second season of The Gilded Age on HBO. For more details about both shows, Harlan Corbin's Shelter, PrimeVideo.com, Gilded Age, HBO.com, and it'll also be played on Max. Deborah Kantmeyer, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on a fantastic career and great, great work all over the place. And we'd love to have you back when you have shows like Witch in Harlem coming. It's been a terrific time having you on.
Thank you, Simon. It's been so great talking with you. I really appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome, Deborah. Take care. Have a sensational week and a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
You too, Simon.
Deborah Kantmeyer, episodic TV director, joining us live from Piermont, New York. More tomorrow will be televised, including our classic trivia question coming up. First, a word from Laird Superfood. Are you ready to feel more energized, focused, and supported? Go to LairdSuperfood.com and add nourishing plant-based foods to fuel you from sunrise to sunset. Use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout to save 15% off your purchase today. Now, if you're looking for a better coffee experience, for example, well, try out Laird Superfood Creamers. They're produced from high-quality, all-natural ingredients, sustainably sourced, and whole food all the way. No artificial flavors, colors, or additives. Ramp up your energy and focus today with Laird Superfood Creamers, available at LairdSuperfood.com. That's LairdSuperfood.com. Remember, you save 50% off your purchase when you use the promo code TELEVISE, TELEVISED, at checkout. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. Last week, we're offering the question. We have three prizes in store for you if you win. Two CDs, the Chicago Greatest Hits CD, and Lifetime's Women in Rock, featuring classic tunes from the likes of Joan Jett, the Blackhearts, the Bangles, Cyndi Lauper, Annie Lennox, the Redsets, and the Ronstadt, and so many more. And our AMC Networks provided Uber card. They'll all be yours if you know the answer to this question. Name one of two Academy Award nominated supporting actors playing the high school principal on the 1960s television series from NBC, Mr. Novak, starring James Franciscus. Name one of two Oscar-nominated, actually won an Oscar, for the Best Supporting Actor category, playing the high school principal on the 1960s TV series, Mr. Novak, starring James Franciscus. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First with the correct answer, you win. Remember, you got one or two answers to get, and as soon as we get your information by email, we will send the prizes to you. If you are a previous winner or a guest of this program, you are not eligible. And remember, if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow on Facebook and X, formerly Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. One more time, the question. Name one of two Oscar-nominated supporting actors who played the high school principal on the 1960s NBC series Mr. Novak, starring James Franciscus. In order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. Coming up at the top of the hour, our special half-hour tribute to Bob Barker, who passed away this past Saturday at the age of 99. Rick Morris, the host of the FDA Lounge, had the wonderful opportunity to interview Barker not just once, but seven times over the course of his career. You will hear Rick Morris live after we pause after the bottom of the after the top of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching over 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you like great radio that features women at their best, check out the January Jones Show every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific on BTR. That's the January Jones Show tomorrow and every weekday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget Best BTR at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second hour of this episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, the promo about TV's current and future, and we welcome all of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Avon with you live from New York, 74 degrees at the top of the hour. Great to have you with us. A very important hour in store for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. All you got to do is pick up the phone and dial in. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, we have our chat room in business. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Rick Webb, our superfan from Philadelphia, already in the room. And while the promo's on the air, you connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon to Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Screen. Follow the instructions of TV Live with you. This past Saturday, probably the last of the first generation of great game show and panel show hosts, a roster that includes such people as Bill Cullen, Alan Ludden, Merv Griffin, John Daly, Bud Collier, Jack Barry, and others, Bob Barker, the host of Truth or Consequences, and the revival of The Price is Right, first, the new Price is Right, for the first 35 years of its more than half-century run on CBS Daytime, passed away at the age of 99. My next guest had the wonderful opportunity not only to interview Barker once, but seven times as the host of the FDH Lounge, the program that I have been on as well many times. Joining us live from Cleveland, the host of the FDH Lounge and an interview exclusive, Rick Morris. Rick, it is very good to have you with us. Thank you for making the time.
Simon, thank you so much for having me on today. It's overwhelming for me to have the opportunity to talk about Bob's life in terms of the interviews that we did, the conversations that we had, and I'm appreciative of this platform.
What was it like interviewing this man?
Well, I go to that word again, overwhelming, because, again, getting him here, our producer there in the New York area, our guest booker, Steve Cervello, the same gentleman that put you in touch with us and led to you becoming a regular on our program over the years, he happened to get in touch with Bob's people over a period of time, and the interviews that got set up, first of all, during Bob's initial book tour in 2009, and then later on in the year when he was on Monday Night Raw as a guest host. Getting those opportunities through Henry Bollinger as a publicist, I have to thank him for that. It's one of those things where it doesn't quite feel real when you're going through it, that you're going to have the opportunity. And Steve, of course, has booked many other big-time guests for our program, but none of them have ever balked at the fact that we referred to Bob Barker as our greatest guest, because he's, among other things, I think one of the most famous men of the last century. I don't think that can be denied. And in terms of it, just so it's a thing where it's overwhelming on one level, but Bob proved to be such an approachable and affable individual and somebody who was just up for having a good conversation that he put me as much at ease as I could possibly be. It's hard to speak to a man of his magnetism or his magnitude, well, magnetism also, right? Hard to do that and feel completely at ease because that's just kind of intimidating. But Bob was as unintimidating a person as he could be in his effect, and I really appreciated that.
Incidentally, because we want to get you involved and give Rick as much time to talk about his interviews with Bob Barker and a few things to say, too, as well along the way, this half hour is going to be commercial-free and promo-free. So we're going to go straight through to the bottom of the hour. So get in on the phone. Get in the chat room. Soon as you do, sooner we address what you have to say. Avable seems to be the gift that Barb had with contestants, whether it was on Truth or Consequences or The Price is Right or other places. And I think some of that came from the fact that he had the radio background, as many of the first generation. Cynthia Littleton Variety said today, the greatest generation of game show hosts and panel show hosts, the people who came of age in the 1950s, like Bob and Bill Cullen and John Daly and Bud Collier and so forth. They had the radio experience. And Bob's case he had the experience of a Los Angeles radio show where he would frequently go out and speak to people and listen to what they had to say, and he had that gift of drawing the best out of people. What did he have to say to you about that gift?
Well, that was something where, again, he just really kind of worked at it and dedicated himself to it, and again, a completely self-made man, just learning as much as he could along the way, and that was one of the most important elements of what he brought to everything. And I was in reviewing some of his clips with me in recent days, I was struck by this, and he mentioned in the course of writing his memoirs, Priceless Memories, that he wanted it to be in a conversational style, and he felt that he had accomplished that. And I hear that, and what I kind of think about a little bit is the conversational style is basically what I equate to new media, conversations such as the kind of ones that we're having, as opposed to traditional 20th century media, where not to necessarily put everything with a broad brush, paint with a broad brush, but it tended to be more question and answer, as opposed to a couple of guys having a conversation like we're doing here. And what that tells me, and Bob's ability to have those conversations with me and be as revealing about his life as he was, is that people think of him, and obviously, and I understand why, as being a product of his time and age. But had Bob Barker been born later on, I think he'd be dominating the medium that we're on right now. I think Bob Barker, ironically, was made for new media. And by the time it emerged late in his life, aside from being an occasional guest on a program, he really didn't have much interest in it. He had said to me at one point that he really wasn't much on the Internet. But again, a Bob Barker that had come along at a later point in time, I have no doubt whatsoever he would be dominating this medium if he wanted to.
Aside from his ability to be in the moment with contestants, what else set him apart from his contemporaries as a game show and panel show host?
Well, he had a quick wit. He was good at being able to respond to things, and that was really kind of it was fun to kind of parry a little bit with him back and forth as we were doing our conversations. He had a good ability to kind of keep up on that and come up with something on the spur of the moment as far as just the right thing to say to either deliver an insight, get a laugh, whatever the case may be. But it was one of those things where I think it was his character of all things that really kind of shined through, that he was just somebody that, again, that you could believe in. And at a point in time when over the course of his career on CBS, over those couple of decades, and of course he'd been a successful game show host previously, of course, but over that period of time, we've seen different people will ascribe it to different things, this sort of loss of moral authority in this country from some of the leading figures out there. And Bob Barker never stopped being somebody that you could believe in. And I think that really was a big component of his success.
Did he have anything to say about how he adapted to the revival of The Price is Right? Because when that came out, it was an instant hit off the bat, but it was also one of the most unique game shows ever to pop in terms of reviving because it wasn't revived the way a normal game show is revived, where you have basically the same rules as the original Price is Right, because you had all these pricing games that had never been tried, and the whole concept of the show in the beginning that Bill Cullen did for 9 years, first on NBC, then on ABC, both in daytime and primetime, was you bid on an item, and you kept bidding, and the one that was closest, the actual jackpot going over won. Here, that process in one bid was the stepping stone to all these pricing games, and I understand that Bob was very improvisational in terms of not using two cards.
Yes. He thrived on it. He absolutely did. And I think you are very correct in pointing out how intertwined his success was with the format of the program, because with all due respect to even some of the other leading talk show hosts of the time period that overlapped with his, I don't want to say that none of them could come along and had a level of success with that, but not everybody would have been cut out for doing that. And the ability to be able to adapt to, as you say, all the different aspects of the game every day. For those of us that, again, would watch it when we were home sick from school, you know, all the different aspects of the game that really kind of set it apart. And everybody had their favorite parts of it, whether it be the wheel. Everybody seems to come back to the wheel. But any of the different elements there, again, he could just adapt to any circumstance, play off of what the contestants had to say. And it really, I think in that way, it brought out the best in him because it showed his variety to adapt to different situations.
Did you ever ask him about how he managed to deal with all these different pricing games and the fact that you never knew when the game was going to happen in any given show? And ultimately, there was like 80 games or 85 games in rotation. Some games were in for a while, then they were taken out. Others were adapted or readapted. And there were always new games, you know, at least one or two every season, about the whole process of having to deal with all these games and you know, keep in your mind, like, oh, Plinko is about this and Grocery Game's about that and Lucky Seven is such and such.
Yes, and it was a matter of him essentially having to do his homework and just kind of stay up on everything, and that it wasn't a matter of necessarily mastering every different aspect of it right away. He was somebody who made it look easy, but as is generally the case, anybody who makes it look easy, it's the product of a lot of sweat and preparation and everything that goes into it. So Bob was always keen to get everything mastered way before the start of a new season and before he would have to adapt to any of the changes in the game.
Did Bob ever talk about his contemporaries? Did he ever talk about Bill Cullen or Bud Collier or Jack Barry or Merv Griffin or any of the other game show, panel show hosts who, like I said, comprised the first generation, the generation he was part of in game show lore, the people that set the tone of game shows and panel shows in the 1950s?
Yes, and when names came up, he was always complimentary, and Bob was never somebody who approached anything as a competition. So it wasn't a matter of necessarily, well, who's the greatest of all time, even though, again, a lot of people, myself included, would lay that mantle at his feet. He wasn't necessarily someone who was keen to do that. He would have kind words for his contemporaries because, again, nobody knows what goes into it like somebody else in the business there. So Bob always had a great empathy for those who were in the same line of work as he was, knowing firsthand all of the pressures that they faced.
Rick Morris, the host of the FDH Lounge, he is with us on our special half-hour tribute to Bob Barker, who passed away at the age of 99 this past Saturday morning in Los Angeles of natural causes. By the way, there will be no memorial service in public. It will be private. And I do want to also read a statement from Fremantle Media, or Fremantle, the people who put together The Price is Right. That comes from Christina Kirk, who's the VP of Publicity. And this is what Fremantle said a few hours after the announcement of Bob Barker passing away. We are deeply saddened to hear Bob Barker has passed at the age of 99. The renowned host of Fremantle's The Price is Right for 35 years, animal activist, radio host, husband, and all-around game show legend will forever hold a spot in our hearts. Bob will be greatly missed. We thank him for bringing joy to our homes for so many beautiful years. Our condolences to the staff and crew of The Price is Right and the fans. And we also point that we did reach out to Fremantle to see if anybody from Price is Right, including Evelyn Waffle, the first female host, executive producer of the program. She was on our show 2 years ago when she was promoted from co-executive producer under the previous regime to executive producer in the height of the pandemic to have her come on the program. And unfortunately, could not get back to us in time. But we will keep that invitation open. Rick, of all the topics that you approached Barker about, what was he most chatty about?
I would say, and this is unsurprising to anybody who is aware of his advocacy, animals, animal welfare, protecting animals from just standard wrongdoing to sort of the grave wrongdoing that is done to them. And I will give you an example. One of his appearances happened to be in October of 2011. Now, he was booked largely at that time because the Cardinals were in the World Series. He was always so he loved that team so much, loved talking about them. And he was booked for just a standard baseball discussion, essentially. But from the time when he was booked to when he came on the air, of course, in my home state of Ohio, the Zanesville Animal Massacre happened. For anybody that remembers that, that state Ohio, you had somebody with a private zoo with all these animals that were appallingly sort of kept there, and then, of course, they got on the loose. Many, if not all of them, had to be put down. It was a very, very appalling situation. And on that occasion, that was when I think Bob was probably at his most vehement and making many, many important points. I mean, he was prepared. He was raring to go to talk about this, about the kind of regulations that need to be in place for any kind of keeping of private animals. And again, that these private zoos essentially are an abomination. And he was able to go on at some length on the subject. So it was very, very apparent the level of knowledge, not just that he acquired in the time since then, but that he was walking around with on a regular basis, learning, educating himself on this. He was friends with Jack Hanna down based in the Columbus area here. He was speaking sorrowfully of Jack Hanna's exposure in the situation here, of Jack having to deal with the trauma on going to Zanesville and encountering this. So on that occasion and on other occasions, Bob was probably, again, the most chatty and conversational about what needed to be done on various animal issues and the mistreatment of animals. And, again, a very, very passionate and very educated man on the subject, which I know will surprise nobody.
Mm-hmm. He also did a lot of non-game show promoting. For a number of years, I believe he did the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on CBS. He did the Turn of Roses Parade on New Year's Day on CBS in the mornings out of Los Angeles. Hosted, co-hosted, and of course there were all the years as the host of the Miss USA and Miss Universe pageants on CBS, and we were also televised worldwide in the case of Miss Universe. So he was sort of what Burke Parks was to NBC and Miss America for so many decades. He was the Miss USA and Miss Universe. Of all those projects and others that were not game, what was his favorite?
Well, it's hard to say, but believe it or not, it might have been a one-off, and that was when he was on Monday Night Raw as a guest host in 2009. And he was very, very effusive about that. He spoke of that not just on the occasion when we talked to him right coming off of that, but in reviewing some of our old clips that came up in some other conversations and how taken he was with this. Because one of the things about Bob is, and this is something that not many people realize, but the kind of almost Forrest Gump type youth that he had, as far as this is somebody who was there, who was an eyewitness to history with many other different figures that would go on to become very prominent subsequently. In his small town, he got to see Stan Musial play in the minor leagues for the St. Louis Cardinals organization. He got to see Frank Sinatra coming through town when he was just starting off as a singer. And yes, he got to encounter Gorgeous George doing wrestling, I think, at the local armory. And if I remember correctly, I think Bob might have participated in the local promotion with that in some form or fashion. So to see where wrestling had been at that period in time and what had it grown into by 2009 and what Vince McMahon had done with it, Bob had such a great degree of fascination with that and the way that he interacted off of the characters. And I just happened to see this past weekend, Chris Jericho, who had the most notable interaction with him on camera, said that was like the closest he ever came to breaking character. Like Bob, it was all he could do not to laugh as Bob was just there, because how could you not when you're in the presence of Bob Barker and he's performing that kind of comedy? So Bob loved to be in any kind of a situation where he could be entertaining, and he felt so at home with that experience, and he enjoyed it so much.
In a lot of the clips and interview segments I have seen over the last 48 hours, Bob was very enamored of Ralph Edwards. He always felt that he gave him his break by hosting the daytime version of Truth the Consequences, which ran a decade on NBC in daytime, then in early evening on the Metro Media stations, other places in syndication, including WAW TV here in New York. What do you have to say about Ralph? Because Ralph was also a trendsetter. He was a game show host on radio with Truth the Consequences, but he also created such shows as This Is Your Life and then later on The People's Court.
Yes, he had a great affinity for him. And, again, this was somebody that, as you say, he felt gratitude to him for his role in helping to escalate Bob's career. And, yes, it was a thing where Bob never had an ill word to say about anybody in any of our seven conversations. But of those that he went out of his way to put over, certainly Mr. Edwards was a chief among them.
Bob's last appearance on The Price is Right was, I believe, in 2000, I think it's like 2000, it was several years after he had ended his role as the host. It was an April Fool's segment, which was well known for being unique. There was the girl, Models Rule. There was Craig Ferguson being the host of the Late Late Show. And what happened was that Bob Barker came out on the April Fool's Day episode. There was no advance. It was one of the greatest kept secrets, and maybe in the history of CBS and television. Not a press release, not a promo, nothing. And you watched 11 o'clock, and George Gray is saying, and here's your host, Drew Carey, and Bob Barker comes out, and the place goes bonsai. You have never – I think it was the most surprising moment maybe in the history of television. One of the most did you ever ask about that and his reaction to that incredible level of love that came on that stage in that studio?
Yes, and it's a matter of how much he always enjoyed going back, because whether it was for that or for his, I think, for his 90th birthday, when he was back there, I think, also during the book promotion. So he always appreciated going back, and I've always just thought to myself, imagine what it was like to be in the audience that day, because, again, you go there and you think, oh, this is great. I get to see The Price is Right. This is something I get to tell everybody about versus that's something you get to tell your grandkids about, that you were there on the day that Bob Barker came back. So that is just it was emblematic of the ongoing and enduring mutual respect and affection that Bob had with the network, with the program. They remained on such very good ties throughout the years. And Bob, when we were talking about this, and with Drew Carey being a fellow Clevelander like myself, Bob was always very complimentary of Drew and felt that he was doing a fine job carrying on the franchise. So yes, it's the ongoing, you know, mutual respect and everything like that, and love and whatever else you want to call it. It was still there through the end, and there is no question whatsoever that CBS is going to be, I'm sure, going out of its way to acknowledge him in that light moving forward.
Yeah, but that moment, which again is the most unexpected moment, because there was, again, Rick, no advance publicity. It had to be the greatest kept secret, because you might remember the game shows are taped, in many cases, several months ahead of time. So
you
know, I promise you, it was not a single press release. There was no promo. There was nobody. It had to be the greatest kept secret, one of the greatest kept secrets in history of television. And I'll never forget also when he comes out and gets the incredible standing ovation that I'm sure would probably have lasted, you know, forever. He comes out and says, the people at The Price is Right, I'm sort of paraphrasing here, the people at The Price is Right asked me to be their April Fool. And, of course, the crowd just laughed themselves silly. And he does Lucky 7. It was just one of the most amazing, I think, surprising moments of a television program or any television that I've ever seen.
Yes, and that's absolutely true. And, again, it is, as you say, remarkable that it didn't leak out in any form or fashion. That, to this day, is something that shocks me. But it's one of those things also, too, where, again, he would make these brief public appearances, and I think sometimes on behalf of some of the animal rights organizations during his retirement years. And it's one of those things where I was always glad whenever that was the case, whenever he would show up somewhere, that a larger group would be privy to what I was privy to, and anybody else that was checking out our program, which is the fact that to the very last time I talked to him, his faculties were always sharp. He still had it mentally. It was a thing where, again, I know he did fall a couple times in recent years, as is generally the case for anybody that makes it to their 90s, but again, it's his immense commitment to physical fitness, I think, that got him to 99, because, again, all of that would have happened a lot earlier if he wasn't keeping himself in peak physical condition to that point. But razor sharp through the last time that we had him on the show, and I'm sure beyond that as well. And I'm very glad that every time that he did make a public appearance that everybody could see that.
And when was the last time you interviewed Bob?
The last time was in January of 2017, and the first time was in May of 2009. So there was a run there of about 7.5 years of having him on with the 7 conversations. They weren't necessarily always spaced out evenly. And then, again, there had been some outreach since 2017, and subsequently that ended up being the final booking, and so that was a thing where I could kind of draw my own conclusions at that point in time of how things were going here, and that Bob always had just that standard of like how he wanted people to remember him. And in that seventh conversation we had on our show, he certainly went out on top. And I think in the final public appearances he ever made, he went out on top, and that's exactly the way he would like it to be.
And let's remember that, you know, and not everybody is perfect, but obviously in the latter years there were the scandals, and I'm not going to go through it all. But the thing is, though, he did manage, even with that, and whatever you think is whatever you think, that he went out on top. He went out his own way. It was his choice to do it, not a firing by CBS or Fremantle or anybody, and he lived a complete life. And in the end, he lived a totally complete life.
Yes, and I will say the only time we ever got near any of that was in the first conversation as far as the memoirs went, because I did a little compare and contrast, because I think it was the previous week on our program, it is the show, after all, where nothing is off topic, and we had had on one of the great pro wrestling managers and valets of the 1980s, Missy Hyatt. And she was doing her memoirs, and Missy was quite the bombshell in her career, as anybody who watched will remember. So she went through a couple of her marriages and divorces were on the public record. Some of her other relationships were not. And she detailed it all relatively gleefully. And I don't say that in any kind of judgmental kind of a sense. It made for fun reading, after all, but it was one approach. And I compared and contrasted that talking to Bob. I just said that he chose not to say a negative word about anybody. I didn't delve into the specifics, but that he had a philosophical approach that clearly he wanted to take the high road on things. And Bob ended up starting his answer with a soundbite that we have continued to use on the show to this day. Because when I was talking about that, Bob started his answer by saying, well, you're a very discerning fellow. And so, obviously, I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that over the years, Simon.
You know, Rick, you wish that you could have an ear to heaven right now to see that Bob is now reunited with all those other great game and panel show hosts that really set the framework for game shows and panel shows on television, with the likes of Alan Ludden and Bill Cullen and Bud Collier and Jack Barry, and not to mention other folks like Monty Hall, and, of course, his wife of that great romance, Dorothy Jo, that they're all reunited up there. And you got to wonder what they're talking about, what they're doing. It's like, Bob, come on up.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's one of the things I think that makes it easier for anybody who was really kind of depressed about this thing is to think of Bob now, think of him on the other side and reaping everything that he deserved from when he was here, because it was a great life in terms of his career and in terms of everything that he accomplished, but all the more so, I think, in terms of the character of the man and the way that he tried to give back to society in various ways. There's a lot of people who make it big, who are very selfish with everything that they have earned and gained, and Bob was anything but. Bob was the guy who, again, lived the kind of life to get him to that elevated place right now, Simon, where he is having those great conversations with those exalted figures.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he's reminding everybody in one way or another, hey, Drew, remind everybody every end of every program coming toward noon Eastern time, help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
Yes, and that, again, a matter of such importance to him, the way that he always ended his show from when he really picked up the torch of that cause in the 1980s. And, again, his overall commitment with animal welfare, and particularly in the ways that they are the most grievously abused. Because, again, not everybody will necessarily agree with Bob's definition of abuse vis-a-vis eating meat or anything like that, but there's a lot of areas here, and when you're getting into, you know, the private zoos and the mistreatment and clubbing of baby seals and all of that, you would like to think that there's a wide area of agreement that most of us could have on some of these issues that Bob championed over the course of his life.
And if you want to hear those interviews that Rick Morris had with Bob Barker on his program, here's where you go, thefdhlounge.com, thefdhlounge.com. Wonderful program. I have been on the show many times to talk about the world of television. And, Rick, I cannot thank you enough for coming on today and for all your thoughts about truly one of the most iconic people, not just for game show television, but for all of television, Bob Barker.
Simon, it's my pleasure. Thank you. And as I say, I'm honored and I'm blown away that I could be asked onto a platform to talk about Bob's life and my recollections of my interactions with him. So thank you so much, and I hope it was something that your listeners enjoyed.
I am sure they did from first to last, Rick. Thank you again for doing it. Take care. Have a great week ahead and a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
Thank you, Simon. You too.
And we'll talk soon. Take care. Yes. Rick Morris, the host of the FDH Lounge. And again, if you want to hear the interviews that he did on that Bob Barker, go to thefdhlounge.com, thefdhlounge.com. When we come back, the latest on the writer's strike and the actor's strike. It is time to get this situation righted up. And I have a couple of ways how. And I'd love to hear from you as well. We will do that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Jay King program. Jay and his crew will make sure you get entertained to the max. Every weekday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio. That's the Jay King program. Every weekday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this Monday afternoon edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. It's brought to you by Cure, the instant drink mix that naturally boosts your ability to live to the max. Tom and Abba with you again along for the ride. Bubba Lutz just joining us at the bottom of the hour, 75 degrees at the bottom here in the New York metro area. Hope everything is great where you are. And we'd like to have you give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up, if for those of you who missed our first hour, we will have, before we leave you, at the top of this hour, the classic trivia question and give you an opportunity to answer it. But first, a special extended comment. And if there's anyone who is listening from the Screen Actors Guild AFTRA, from the Writers Guild of America, and AMPTP, Motion Picture and Television Producers Alliance, I really invite you to listen up and listen up big, because it's time to transform where this situation is at. We are now in the fifth month of the Writers Guild strike. We are in the second month of an actors strike. And the results to all the TV industry and to you, the TV viewer out there, has been incredibly, for scripted television particularly, devastating. We are now seeing shows getting canceled that have been already produced and ready to go. We are seeing other shows postponed, whether on broadcast television, cable television, or mega content services like Netflix, Prime Video, Max, Peacock, Paramount Plus, etc. We are seeing so many people out of work. As we had Deborah Kampmeyer say toward the end of her interview last hour, from caterers to cinematographers to film editors to gaffers to production crew to associate producers and so on. And a lot of people in the know are suggesting that if there is no settlement to both strikes by this coming weekend, you can kiss scripted television on broadcast and cable for a good chunk of this upcoming season, 2023-24, goodbye, at least into early 2024. And every day that these strikes continue, it's going to get pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And on the movie side of things, we've already seen a lot of films from various studios that were going to run this coming year being pushed into the fall of next year and 2025. Let's say, however, with television. We are reaching very much the point of no return. And going into this week, it looks like that we're not only still at square one, we are below square one. And I believe we're there because of basically two things. Because two things have botched this process from the get-go to now. Number one, the fact that the Writers Guild and the actors waited for the Directors Guild to make a deal with the Alliance before getting in negotiations, and now the actors are waiting for the Writers Guild to do their thing and get a deal before they negotiate. How lame brain is that? When in the 1960s there were threats of a newspaper strike here in New York, the newspaper publishers did not do that practice. They negotiated a deal with everybody at the same time. At the same time. And they got the deals. And this idea of one union waiting for the other union or another union to make a deal before they make a deal is absolutely horrific. And it's not getting anybody anywhere. The lack of initiative on the part of all three organizations, the Alliance, the Writers Guild, and the Screen Actors AFTRA, is pathetic. And it's inexcusable. And it seems that everybody is like digging in their heels and throwing on the vitriol in the fire and adding to, well, we're not going to do, you know, this until we get this, et cetera, et cetera. And I get the issues out there. I get that we have to deal with a whole new way of residuals for writers and actors. I get with the writers' rooms. And I get the whole situation with artificial intelligence. And as I've said before, all the picketing and all the public vitriol and all the blame game, that's not going to get a deal. What gets the deal is people sitting down together at a table and working out a contract. Not this going back and forth, here's this proposal and that proposal and this proposal and that, and then waiting like a week or two more to come back to the table. No, you stay at the table. You stay and make a deal. That's what United Parcel Service did earlier this year to avoid a strike. They didn't negotiate with just one. They negotiated with everybody involved, all the employees involved, not picking fiefdoms to make deals with first before somebody else got to the table. This whole waiting game has been an absolute disaster. And everybody is hurting. Whether it's TV viewers or people making TV scripted TV programs. That's number one. Number two, the way the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers has behaved from the get-go, where we're not going to talk to the press. We're not going to talk in public. We're going to be the villains. And our behavior is going to represent that. And guess what? They are, to a lot of people, the villains because they don't get their side of the story out. Instead, they decided we're going to stay silent. We're not going to talk. We're not going to come on programs like this. We're not going to give the viewer an understanding of what's at stake here and where we want to go and what we're willing to do to forward the action. We're just going to come out with statements and talking points, and that's it. I would like to remind the people at the Alliance, including the new crisis management team that just was hired before the weekend, which I believe involves a woman who was a former journalist at both CNN and CBS, that strategy, that bunker mentality, that silence doesn't work. Great example, the Tylenol case of the 1980s. Remember the Tylenol situation? Johnson & Johnson was in danger of getting a terrible rep from Tylenol because of what was going on with some people taking it. What did Johnson & Johnson do? They didn't go silent. Took advantage of the situation. They said, we are going to get ahead of it. We are going to set the pace. We are going to be authentic. We're going to be responsible. We're going to be accountable. We're going to do it in public. We're going to have one of our key executives, James Olson, out in public, call a press conference. He is going to get out in front of that national TV audience that was covering that conference, and we're going to own up. And we're going to be accountable. We're going to be responsible. We're going to take responsibility for what actions we did and didn't do, and we're going to take the steps to do better. And that's why on this August 2023 date, Tylenol's rep not only got saved, it's stronger than ever. More people are taking Tylenol. And a lot of that is because the public relations effort. They follow PR 101. You don't stay silent when a controversy breaks. You get out in front of it, and you speak to the audience, and you speak to them authentically. And if there's inauthenticities, you acknowledge them. And that's what the Alliance didn't do. Instead, it was staying silent and letting a press release and piece of paper do the story. Doesn't work. And I hope the crisis management team there and the crisis management team at SAG-AFTRA, which I understand, and maybe the Writers Guild, take that into account. Because guess what? It's no longer just about you, Writers Guild. It's no longer just about you, Screen Actors AFTRA. It's not about you. It's about your entire industry. It is not working. And I hope some of you heard what Deborah Kempmeyer said earlier in our first hour. She nailed it right on the head. There are a lot of people who are not working because these deals aren't done and because of the way these negotiations have gone. Let's get clear. It doesn't work this way. Why are we playing these waiting games? It's ridiculous. So what do we do about it? Well, number one, first thing tomorrow morning, how about both the Writers Guild and SAG-AFTRA representatives meet with the Alliance? Get into a room somewhere in Los Angeles or New York or in between and stay there. Don't move. Make a deal. Go back and forth. Don't just trade proposals and get reaction and then leave the table for a week or two or three and then come back and then ask for more. Be willing to bend. Be willing to give up. You're not going to get everything you want, but you can get a lot more if you stay at that table and negotiate together. Don't wait for the other union. Writers Guild, don't wait for the Screen Actors Guild. Screen Actors Guild after, don't wait for the Writers Guild to make deal. Get in there. Take some initiative. Make some sense for yourself. Start being human beings. Start being mature. Stop acting like spoiled brats. And that goes to the Alliance, too. Don't just go into a meeting as you did with some key executives like David Zaslav and Ted Sarandos last week and basically read a riot act and be unwilling to bend. Be willing to be flexible. The best deals are flexible deals where everybody gets things handled and there is room for down the road. But things get solved in that contract. And believe me, there is flexibility. Yes, the residual situation can be solved. Yes, the writer's room, mini writer's rooms can be solved. Yes. Artificial intelligence. And by the way, give credit to AMPTP. They did bend on artificial intelligence. And everybody, take a second look at that Directors Guild contract. You know the Directors Guild didn't move away from the table? They stay at the table to make that deal. So if the Directors Guild can do it, you can do it. It is time for people to come up with sense. And one sense is, it is time to bring these strikes to a close. How do you do that? You don't stay away from the bargaining table. Get in there and make something happen. Because that's the only way it's going to happen. And you work a proposal all the way. And you listen to each other. And you make these deals. Because right now, we are at, really, a tightrope that is about to break. And if it breaks, I promise you that viewers will lose, broadcasting cable networks will lose off the bat, scripted TV will lose big time, and it won't be long before the mega content services and other services that go through smart TV sets devices, they'll lose too. It doesn't have to be that way. We can get deals done, and it's going to take everybody working in lockstep. That's what's been missing here all along. It's time not to waste time anymore. It is time for everybody to come to that table and work. And it's also maybe time to finally use those suggestions that Joseph Adelon from Buffering suggested about a month ago. One, how about having business affairs people in on these talks, not just labor relations people? How about executives themselves getting in there? How about Bob Iger? How about you, Bob Iger of Disney? How about Mark Pedowitz, former of the CW, who has great empathy for all sides? If you know Mark Pedowitz and his work as the former head of the CW, great empathy with actors, great empathy with writers, great empathy with directors and production people. He'd be perfect. Somebody, some executive in media has got to step up and get into the thick of these negotiations. It's time for deals to be worked out, not split apart with nobody coming to a table. Everybody needs to come to a table now, not later, not waiting weeks, and not one guild getting in and the other guild not. Everybody. And the time starts now. I'd love to hear what all of you have to say. Well, we have some time left in our half hour and our show program today, so give us a call, 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. That's the number to call, or put your thoughts in the chat room, SimonApple04. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/sub. Rick Webb, our superfan facility, was in the room. Rick, if you're still listening, love to hear what you have to say. So give us a call or put your stuff in the chat room. And while we wait, we'll have our classic trivia question for you. But first, we have a message from the great people at Cure. You ever wonder what makes you fatigued or tired at times? Try dehydration. You know, it's a leading cause of headaches, brain fog, and muscle weakness. Luckily, there is a way to bounce back. C-U-R-E, Cure. And if you don't know what Cure is, it's a clear, tasty, effective way to stay hydrated and operate at your best. Cure's instant drink packets mixed with water contains a balance of electrolytes and glucose, while free of artificial flavors, sweeteners, and preservatives. Cure is all natural, all the way, and perfect to deploy on the go, at work, or home. Try Cure today and feel the difference for yourself. What you got to do is use the promo code TELEVISE, T-E-L-E-V-I-S-E-D, for 20% off your order. That's promo code TELEVISE. For more details, go to curehydration.com. Try Cure, the instant drink mix that naturally boosts your ability to live to the max. So one more time, here's our classic trivia question of the week. It's our second and final week we're offering it. Once again, we have three prizes in play, two of them CDs. Wonderful Chicago Greatest Hits CD with songs like If You Leave Me Now, 25 of 6 to 4, Feeling Stronger Every Day, and much more. And the Lifetime Women of Rock CD with great artists like The Eurythmics, Linda Ronstadt, Michelle Shock, Laura Branigan, Bananarama, and more. And that free Uber card courtesy of AMC Networks. All that if you know the answer to this question. Name one of two Academy Award-nominating supporting actors playing the high school principal on the NBC 1960s television series Mr. Novak, starring James Franciscus. Here's a hint. One of those supporting actors actually did win an Oscar. The other was nominated. So name either one, and you win. And if you're first with the correct answer, and you got to make sure it's an email correct answer, you will win. You got two answers to go for. And if you win, we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. Make sure that you email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure that you enclose your answer by email, and you're first with it, you win, and we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. And if you are a previous guest or a previous winner on the program, you are not eligible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow on Facebook and X, otherwise known as Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, and X and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so one more time. Last time for today. Here is that question. Name one of two Academy Award-nominated supporting actors playing the high school principal on the NBC 1960s television series Mr. Novak, starring James Franciscus. And you see episodes of that series 24/7 at YouTube.com. And, of course, YouTube is also available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. So in order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. Again, I want to thank all of our guests for being here today, and thank all of you, by the way, for listening, especially the last half hour on our half hour that's before this one with our special tribute to Bob Barker. And once again, I want to say, if you want to catch the interviews that Rick Morris did with Bob Barker, seven of them, go to the FDHLounge.com. That's the FDHLounge.com. Before I tell you about who will be on our show Friday, our first episode, September 2023, I want to remind you about two things. One, you can catch me in person on Wednesday on Sports Newswire, the daily sports information show on Sports Grid Network, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. We talk about the world of television sports. We probably do something on the upcoming NFL TV season, who you can expect on CBS, NBC with Sunday Football, ESPN Monday Football, also on ABC, and much more, plus other topics as well. Craig and the gang will be there. Hope you will be too. That's Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, Sports News Wire on the Sports Grid Network, available on smart sets, smart devices, Amazon Freebie, and other multi-channel bundles. And this Thursday, you can also catch me on Rick Howe's popular show, Talk Back to Television. He does it for TVOT, the TV of Tomorrow website, hosted by Tracy Swedlow, and also it's carried on the USA Today Television Network. It's on Thursday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the USA Today Television Network. You can find that on smart TV sets, smart devices, and many multi-channel bundles. And it was a pleasure to have Rick Howe on, former Showtime executive, popular figure, moderating panels at various TV industry shows. And he also does the Friday Fireside for Tracy Swedlow and TV of Tomorrow, as well as Talk Back to Television. He also has a brand-new venture called Inside Television that's also running on the USA Today TV network. So check that out Thursday, Thursday morning sometime, or before end of day, by email newsletter or tvot.com, and at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on the USA Today television network. And we'll be back Friday for our first September episode. Among our guests will be the Emmy-nominated producer from Dr. Phil and Extra, Michael Mazzella. We will get his thoughts about the writer and the actor's strike. And I'll have him respond to the comments I made over the last half hour. So be sure to be tuning in. And again, we'd love to get your thoughts about what we had to say today. We still have a minute or two to go. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. And one more thing. As you know, we are now accepting advertising on the program. So please appreciate our advertisers for coming aboard and try them out, whether it's Cure, Laird Superfood, Liquid IV, and we have other advertisers that are in the pipeline as well. You'll be hearing from them in the weeks and months ahead. And thank you to Zencastr Creator Network for making that possible. So once again, thanks to all of our guests for being here today. Thanks all of you for tuning in. Again, we're back on Friday, regular time, from Eastern New Pacific. Among our guests, Dr. Phil and Extra Emmy-nominated producer Michael Mazzella will get his thoughts about his career and also his thoughts about the ongoing writers and actors' strikes. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blockofway.com/televised. It's blockofway.com/televised. And check out our podcast. They're available 24/7 on more than 40 different podcast sites, from Apple Podcasts, iTunes, iHeartRadio and their podcast network, Spreaker Podcast, Fathom, Odyssey, formerly CBS Radio, and many, many more. And again, as I mentioned earlier, if there's a podcast site you like that isn't taking our show, let me know. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Tell me who to speak to, and we will, you know, make the connection, and hopefully we'll get on. And again, I want to thank Amazon Music and Audible, our latest podcast affiliates, who joined us about 2 weeks ago. And I hope you out there tune in and tell your friends to tune in. And incidentally, if you can't catch us live, you can still participate in the program. All you got to do is take down a number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. So if you're on the go, take a travel stop at work, in the office, or wherever, you can, if you're not hearing our show, but you know who's speaking, use the phone, get in, use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, our phone line and our chat room are available anywhere you're catching our show, from across the country or around the world. We really appreciate you, and we invite you, whether you're listening to us live or beyond on podcast, that you get involved with the show, because the show is more interactive and better when you are. And as always, we love hearing from you. I'd love to hear what you thought about today's episode, from our guests, our salute to Bob Barker, my thoughts about where we stand with the writers and actors' strikes and the impact on you, the TV viewers out there. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum and X or Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. However you respond, we respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Website supervised by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Fakus is our web coordinator. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Cure, the instant drink mix that naturally boosts your ability to live to the max. By Laird Superfood, plant-based coffee creamers and other products that fuel you from sunrise to sunset. And by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being. Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday and your pre-Labor Day week. We'll be back on Friday, day before Labor Day weekend, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web affiliates. By the way, thank you to Duck Northwest Media, just got in the room, gave us a yellow thumbs up. We do appreciate you very, very much. Okay? Okay. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe. Make it great. If you still want to make a contribution to help the people that have been impacted by both the remnants of Tropical Storm Hillary up and down California and the Pacific Northwest, as well as everybody dealing with the aftermath of the wildfires in Maui and other parts of Hawaii, go to redcross.org, salvationarmy.org, unitedway.org, and other institutions. Your contribution will be greatly appreciated. Until the next time, stay well, stay tuned, and as Bob Barker would say, here's hoping all your consequences are happy ones. Goodbye, everybody.